Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Red Sox Beat is back on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio and visual content, even in these ridiculous, rough, challenging times. We're going to do this for you once a week and get you up to speed on what we know. This is Josh Lewin. Ian Brown is going to join us momentarily, MLB.com, RedSox.com. He, in fact, just got back recording this on a Tuesday. He, all the way through Monday, was still knocking around camp, and since I'm ensconced, not even in New England, I'm out here in Solana Beach, California, which is my off-season home, feeling a little guilty, actually. I mean, it's bright and sunny out here, and even though we're all supposed to say stay indoors, there's enough going outside and just kind of walking on the beach. It's enough social distancing that you can do with that. But let's get into it with Ian. We will talk some actual baseball. Got a little bit with Andrew Benintendi to play for you later in the podcast as well. These are all, they were supposed to be seamless, happy moments, little vignettes from spring training, get to know you segments about the guys. So I hope they don't strike a wrong note. And we're going to be just talking about general happy stuff later on. So let's start with the doom and gloom and the abject panic and the anxiety and the stress that we're all going through. And Ian, I'm just curious, when you made your way back, I mean, give me your travelogue, if you don't mind. How scary was it and all of that?
Yeah, I'd like to backtrack, Josh, about a week, actually, because, every spring training, I cover pretty much the entire spring training, but I always go home in the middle for, a five or six day break to see the family. So I flew home on Thursday night, March 5th, and the corona thing hadn't really taken off at that point. I did think, I was sitting at the gate waiting to get on my flight to go home, and, I saw three or four people walk off the plane wearing masks. So it was kind of like, well, this is different, things are really sort of starting to change. And, as I was home for those few days, things were starting to escalate a little more and a little more, to the point where that was when they were talking about how the access rules would change for reporters and they were going to close the clubhouses. So I went back on Tuesday night. I think Tuesday was actually the first day that the MLB clubhouses were closed and they were having press conference settings with reporters. So I didn't quite know what I was coming back into. Flew back Tuesday night, kind of in the back of my mind, like, is spring training going to keep going on, or what's going to happen here? So it was a weird feeling getting on that plane going back to Fort Myers last Tuesday night. The Red Sox had a night game on Wednesday, so I got to the ballpark at JetBlue Park at around 1 o'clock, and I saw this this setting where players are coming outside to talk to the media, and I was just talking to Kevin Pillar, and at that point we're just talking about baseball, Josh. I mean, at that point there was no real. We were starting to hear at that point, okay, Seattle's going to have to move their first few games to a different location because Seattle's just like a war zone in terms of the coronavirus. So hearing little things like that, but nothing about how baseball was going to be shut down. So I'm just talking to Pillar about baseball for, probably 10 minutes, and he's a chatty guy anyway. And then, I drive up to Port Charlotte for the game, and just it was a bizarre night, Josh, because I think it was about the sixth or seventh inning when this craziness with the Utah Jazz, I think it was Oklahoma City game, was called off 5 minutes before it started, you know, a doctor comes running out onto the floor to stop this game. Don't let this game start. So we're in the baseball press box. You know how fast word spreads now. We came into the game thinking about Eduardo Rodriguez and him nailing down his opening day starting nod, which they hadn't become official yet. We're just thinking about baseball things. And all of a sudden, it just became this surreal thing. And then you find out that Rudy Gobert tested positive. And the NBA definitively and quickly shuts down their season. So that's like, okay, this is real. It was really weird talking to Ron Renneke after the game that night, because we asked just a few token baseball questions. We didn't ask him about the other stuff really, because, you know, he was managing the game, so he probably didn't have any idea what was going on. So we kind of left Port Charlotte that night, you know, not having any idea when we were going to see baseball again, because you could tell, you know, NBA was shutting down. NHL was probably going to shut down the next day. Baseball was going to make some sort of decision. And then Thursday was an off day for the Red Sox. So while many other teams were playing grapefruit league games last Thursday, still, even after the NBA had shut down, which really felt weird, the Red Sox had an off day, and I was sort of sitting around my condo just waiting to see what was going to happen. And then get the email at about 3:08 p.m., I think it was, that MLB has canceled the rest of spring training and at least the first 2 weeks of the regular season. So at that point, it's kind of like, you know, what do we do? Because there were different things coming out at first, Josh. At first, it sounded like, well, even though the spring training games were shutting down, a lot of teams were going to be business as usual. They were going to stay at camp. Players are still going to work out. They were going to try to stay sharp. And so you didn't know what this meant. I didn't know what this meant for me as a reporter. Was I still going to be able to talk to guys, albeit with the 6 foot distance rule? Will there still be sort of daily access? I think at first the thought was there might still be some daily access. So I'm sort of just in a holding pattern, really, in Fort Myers over the weekend, just waiting to see what's going to happen. And then you get the message, I think, was it Friday or Saturday, where I think it was Friday night, where MLB sent the memo that not only was spring training over, but they had suspended operations at all the camps. You know, so at that point, I have a pretty good idea. My spring training is done. You know, there's not even going to be much to do from a reporting standpoint. I was still sort of waiting it out through the weekend just to see if there was going to be any kind of definitive action plan. And I think a lot of, at that time, Josh, I think a lot of the players were unsettled. They didn't know whether to leave camp or whether to stay down there. And I think gradually what's happened, Josh, is you've seen guys leave. You've seen guys start to, you know, at first they were like, all right, let's stay sharp. And now they realize that they're in for a prolonged shutdown here. And yeah, they're also realizing that they want to be, you know, with their families, and they just want to be safe during this time. And crowded groups around batting cages aren't the best way to sort of be safe right now. So,
right. You know, that's, yeah, I mean, I'll share with you. I mean, kind of a parallel universe, but I mean, I was at the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas, since I do UCLA basketball, and, you know, business as usual at first, you know, guys going out to dinner, the whole thing, you know, everybody just kind of doing fist bumps instead of handshakes, and then it became elbow bumps, but you're still thinking, okay, you know, this is kind of gonna not really mushroom that badly. And then the way the dominoes just started to, like on 8x speed, started to fall. So, you know, I mean, in my case, I'm prepping for UCLA against Cal, then you're told, don't go to the arena, just pack up and go home. And then in the time that it takes to get home, baseball is coming out with, well, you know, we're going to be slightly delayed. And then it's, you know, I mean, as you know, very soon after, it was 8 weeks at the earliest. And so it is very changeable. You were not yet on the beat. You're not old enough to have been on the beat in 2001 when 9/11 happened. But you weren't. How old are you?
I was actually at, my first year was 2002. I was just going to say 2001 was my first year working for MLB.com. And I was actually based in New York at the time as like a regional writer. So I remember that story profoundly. And I remember, you know, living, you know, we lived in Queens at the time, and we could smell the smoke from Manhattan. And I remember going to Shea Stadium because they had turned that into like a loading station for donations and things like that. So, yeah, I do remember that time, not as a beat writer for the Red Sox, but I do remember 9/11 very well.
But I remember how quickly it became apparent, because, like, you know, to me, I was actually in Detroit at the time. I was getting ready to do a Tigers game, and as the day unspooled, it's like, wow, you know, we're not playing ball tonight, obviously. But then to start to realize, wait a minute, are we ever going to play ball again? You know, I mean, it went from that to that in almost no time. So in this new world order that is so rapidly changing, and again, by the time people are downloading and listening to this, it might have changed again. When you left and talked to the last remaining people that were down there, what was the general sense as of that, I guess, day before St. Patrick's Day? I mean, were people, people now are saying, ha ha, Angel Hernandez, the umpire, walked off the field and said, see you guys in June. And everybody was like, oh, please, Angel, come on. Yeah. Now we're thinking it might be July. I mean,
Jerry Remy said something similar to me when we were, you know, when I saw him in the elevator at Port Charlotte, you know, where, you know, I think Angel and I think Jerry had the same. I don't think they had any inside information. I think they're just thinking, you know, this is crazy. This could be a long time. So who knows, Josh? I think, like you said, I think a best case scenario right now is that they're going to be playing baseball in June, maybe ramping up some sort of spring training again in May at some point. So I think that's best case, but you just have to see how the events are evolving here. And, you know, Kevin Gregg called me on Sunday around. He's the Red Sox PR director. He called me at about noon Sunday and just said, just a heads up, I'm flying home with my family tomorrow. So that was when I was like, okay, PR staff is leaving. I guess I can go home now too. There's not really going to be anything to do at the ballpark. So yeah, it was a strange, you know, the airport was, I don't know, it was pretty much business as usual yesterday, other than, you know, a lot of people were wiping down their seats with the disinfectant wipes and all that. But, you know, it wasn't really anything out of the ordinary. My flight was actually pretty full, I think, because a lot of people just wanted to get back to Boston because you don't know when the air travel is going to be grounded or whatever. So that's kind of where we are. And it's like, now you get home and it's like, this is weird. I've never been home for the off season in March before.
But real quick, Ian, I got to mention to people, and it's weird in the gambling space for sure. I mean, in Vegas, I can tell you, walking through what was just literally a ghost town of a sports book. And the only thing that was on was, you know, like the last, I think it was Pirates spring training game. It was like the last of the Mohicans. Yeah. But got to mention that with no NBA, NHL, MLB, BetOnline still has a lot of things going on. Hundreds of places to wager, from their online casino to poker and blackjack. That's going to be big now. They're all open 24 hours a day and all online. So whether it's esports, I mean, whatever's still going on, if you're in entertainment, you can bet on American Idol. You can bet on the elections and the spelling bee and even the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, assuming that's going forward. So be sure to use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, your full access wagering solution. And, you know, here we are all now kind of looking for alternate programming, so to speak. Yeah. And I'll give a quick shout out actually to the other thing that I'm involved with on CLNS, and hopefully people are finding it. I'm hoping you found it too, Ian, because the Red Sox actually were just a part of this. The Throwback League is something that I started about a month ago before all this chaos and nonsense came down. But it's basically replacing March Madness, as it turns out here. It's a 48-team bracket, just like March Madness would have been. Well, almost. I mean, that's 64 teams, obviously. But it's the 32 World Series teams from basically our generation, Ian. I mean, it's mid-70s to the mid-00s. I threw 16 at-large teams in there to round out the field. Seed them all. And the games are played, simulated with the computer algorithm that we use, the whatifsports.com, which is a great website too.
Oh yeah. I love What If Sports.
You know, it's the best. So I just take that play by play that spits out. I mean, it tells me what happened when the 85 Royals were matched up against the, who did they play? I can't even remember now. Maybe
Cardinals.
Well, no, for real. But in this sim, I think they played like the 03 Yankees or something like that.
Okay, so, yeah.
You know, you got Raul Mondesi leading off against Danny Jackson, which just kind of blows your mind. So, it's like opening up a pack of baseball cards and reanimating them. I'm bringing these teams back to life and these players back to life. I go into a home studio, record the play-by-play with sound effects and all that, and they drop as a podcast every Monday. It's called The Throwback League. We'll have the 48th and final game right around Christmas or something like that. So, nice little time waste. If you haven't found it yet, we encourage you to. What's going to occupy your time? I'm going to ask you about this one column you just wrote, which is great. I mean, because it's, you know, five key spring training takeaways for the Red Sox, and that's an important column. But we might have to put a pin in it until the 4th of July or whatever. So what are you going to be doing and writing about between now and then?
Yeah, you know, we're just sort of starting to settle on that with our bosses, and we're having a staff conference call tomorrow to sort of talk about it, you know, where we go from here, because this is a different time. But I imagine it'll be you know, a lot of answering fans' questions, like mailbag type of stuff. I imagine maybe we'll do some historical type of stuff, because that might be time, you know, fun for people to read about right now. But you know, we'll come up with content. We'll come up with Red Sox fans with some stuff for Red Sox fans to read. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, how we're going to do it, when we're going to do it, and also finding out from the Red Sox, you know, how are they going to have weekly conference calls and make, you know, the manager, Ron Renicki, available, and maybe make some players available just to see what they're up to. So it's all kind of it's an unknown territory. So, you know, we'll keep busy with work, not as busy as usual, of course. And also, I think a lot of us are going to be binge watching some TV, Josh. I'm finally getting into Mad Men. It was one of those shows I was getting on and off for a long time, and I'm finally just all in now, and I'm starting season 4. So just things like that, and just hanging out with my family, because, you know, it's funny, my wife's a school teacher, and she's out of school now until April 27th. Same with my two high school age kids. And my oldest is a sophomore at Springfield, Massachusetts College, but you know, he's on spring break right now, but they're almost certainly going to go virtual online learning. They haven't announced it for sure yet, but I'm sure like almost every university in the area, they're going to go to virtual for the rest of the semester. So I doubt he's going to go back to finish his second semester of his sophomore year. So it's just kind of a, you know, a different time where, you know, we're used to our family being in so many different directions. Everybody's busy. Everybody's doing this, doing that. And we're all just going to be kind of home. So it's not nice, and it's also kind of strange at the same time.
Well, as we continue to practice our social distancing, and again, family thankfully is not included in this, and I hope you guys can bond and not get too cooped up and get ready to kill each other. But back to your piece, because, you know, at some point it is going to be relevant, and my key takeaways from your key takeaways is that we still don't know about Chris Sale. Erod and Eovaldi look great so far, but it was half of spring training, so that's all we got. Where are you with the rotation right now? I'm mildly excited about the Martin Perez addition. I mean, at least he eats some innings, kind of like a lefty Porcello to me. If that's all he is, that's fine. But where do you see the rotation once we get going again?
Yeah, and I think I wrote this in the piece, but the thing I was really encouraged by, Josh, was Eduardo Rodriguez and Nathan Eovaldi, they just look ready for business this year. I mean, they just both look like guys who are ready to hold down that one and two spots in the rotation. I don't think it's much of a surprise with Rodriguez after you saw what he did last year. But Eovaldi, there were a lot of unknowns with him, you know, from last year, where he was just wildly inconsistent, wasn't nearly the same guy he was in the 18 postseason. So obviously that workload in 18 took a toll on him, and he looks just back to where he was in 18. So I think that's exciting. But after that, there are questions, and you hope that, like you said, Perez can be that Porcello type from the left side. He's throwing 95, 96, so I think they thought all along, if they could get, you know, some of their analytics guys with him and work with him, and maybe they could get more out of him than we've seen from him before. So mildly optimistic there. But yeah, there's a lot of concern about, you know, what are you going to get out of 4-5? Ryan Weber pitched very well. He's not a guy who's going to make your socks go up and down, because he's just kind of a finesse thrower. But he was doing a good job in spring training. He looked like he was close to earning the fourth spot in the rotation. And then the fifth spot is just totally a free-for-all. I think it is going to be an opener, it seems like. And I think guys like Colton Brewer and Darwinson Hernandez, not necessarily as the guy who starts the game, but the guy who kind of fills that three innings in the middle of the game, could become a very big part of that opener scenario. So, and then Sale, you know, this is weighing on all of us. It's just like, you know, is he going to need surgery or not? I think he'd like to know. He'd like to start doing a throwing program soon and sort of figuring things out. So hopefully, even with the stoppage, we'll get a sense in the next few days of where, you know, where Chris Sale might be at in his, you know, with his progression.
You nibbled at the edges of talking bullpen there for a minute too, and you wrote about Ryan Brasher as a comeback candidate, and I sure hope so. I know he worked a lot with Dave Bush and Pete Walker trying to smooth down whatever flaws there were in his delivery. A strong Ryan Brasher, I think, goes a long way once we're talking Red Sox bullpen again, right?
Yeah, and I think the bullpen is better than people think, assuming that Workman can sort of do what he did last year, which, you know, that's a big if, because he had never had a season like that before. So we'd like to – but he did look very good in spring training, Josh. He looked like the same Workman from last year. And I think Barnes is going to be better this year. I think that too much was put on Barnes in the early part of last season. He was asked to do too much. Alex Cora kind of admitted as much. So I think you're going to see Matt Barnes kind of get back to what he was in 2018. And there's a lot to like with guys like Josh Taylor and Darwinson Hernandez with the stuff they have. And Hembree, if he can get him, if he's healthy again, he's a pretty good pitcher out there. So I think the Red Sox are pretty comfortable in the bullpen. They like what they have out there. But yeah, Brazier definitely, if you can get him back, then you can have a really good bullpen.
Let me ask about a couple more guys before I let you go, if you don't mind. You wrote about Jackie Bradley Jr. too, and I think that's a huge piece for this year whenever it gets going with Mookie off in LA. You know, the slumps were long, and they were there for Jackie last year. He ended up hitting 225. That was basically his worst in 5 years. Now, he had a good spring training last year, and it didn't lead to much. Yeah. But you were liking the spring training this year, and I guess the hope is it leads to something better.
Yeah, I do, because I think Jackie is less he's less mechanical with his swing right now. I think he's just letting himself be an athlete. I think that last year he was thinking way too much. He went to see the launch doctor guru, one of JD Martinez's guys, in LA over last offseason. I think it just did more harm than good with Jackie. I don't think that launch angle is for everyone, and I think it just tied his swing in knots, to be honest with you, because then guys started to adjust to it, started to pitch him differently, and I think now Jackie's a very athletic guy, and if he can just like let his instincts take over. Jackie's at his best when he's going to left field, when he's going to left center, using that wall, and then just pulling a pitch when the opportunity presents itself. But yeah, he looked much better to me this spring, and I know, like you said, he put up the good numbers last year, but I think it was just too launch angle heavy, and I think that now he's kind of just getting better. And let's face it, this is a big year for him too. It's a contract year for Jackie, so he'd like to have a good year, just as much as the Red Sox would like to see him have a good year.
Let me finish up with another outfielder you wrote about, and it's not JD Martinez, because he closed very strong last year. His last 50 games or so, he hit 324. The other guy that you did write about, his last 50 games, he hit 203. That's Andrew Benintendi. And he got even worse, actually, in September. He was hitting the 100s in September. So yeah. I know we all hope for the best with Andrew. Where do you see Andrew Benintendi in 2020?
Yeah, kind of determined, with a little chip on his shoulder to prove to people, oh, look, the guy you saw last year, that wasn't me. And, you know, I talked to him very early in spring training this year, and he just kind of admitted that he was – you know, he was chasing pitches he had never chased in his life last year. And I think that he just got off to a bad start. It snowballed, and he spent the whole year trying to make up for it. I think that physically he's in much better shape this year. I think he got bulked up a little bit last year because, you know, he's a guy who would lose weight through the course of the season. So he's trying to prevent that. But now he realizes that maybe that, you know, that training program made him less flexible than he'd been in the past. And he's another guy who's at his best, Josh, when he's playing like an athlete. And that's what I think Andrew Benintendi is going to get back to doing. And I think he's really determined to prove that he can lead off. And he's led off a lot of his life, really, before he got to the Red Sox, whether it be, you know, high school, a lot in college, things like that. So it's a spot that he's comfortable with. And he didn't like the narrative. I could tell he didn't like the narrative that was out there when spring training started, like, oh, Benintendi's not comfortable leading off. So I think that he was immediately trying to disprove that. And he was jumping on pitches in these spring training games. And I remember, like, I think it was the second spring training game, he hit a home run in Minnesota on the first or second pitch of the game. So I think that, yeah, he's determined to have a big year.
Yeah, I remember his first 41 first innings last year. He was 3-for-41 with no extra base hits. So we're all thinking, why is this guy leading off? But anyway, I'm going to leave off right there, kind of put a pin in it, because I know you and I will be talking again. I mean, frankly, there's nothing else to do but talk right now. I'm promising some Andrew Benintendi sound for the rest of the podcast. I'm going to get to that in a moment here. But Ian, thank you again. Great job as always. I'm so glad you got home safely, and hopefully you'll continue to be safe. And in these very turbulent, uncertain times, wish you nothing but the best. I'll be checking back in with you.
All right, you also, Josh. Hope we can get back to baseball before too long.
Yeah, you and me both. Thanks, pal. See you soon.
You got it, bro. Thanks, Josh.
And as we say goodbye to Ian, yeah, let me tell you guys, I do have this tape that I want to run from spring. All right, I do want to get you now to some sound from spring training with Andrew Benintendi. The tone might not quite work here, and for that I apologize, because again, about a month ago when I was able to tape this with Andrew, we had not really heard of coronavirus, and it was just a lot of glad-handing and in general kind of talk, but maybe that's what we need right now, maybe just some return to normalcy to talk to the Cincinnati kid who went off to St. Louis and now Nashville in the offseason. Cincinnati, though, he's so proud of that lineage, and that city, of course, had two very famous baseball natives, Ken Griffey Jr. and Pete Rose, come to mind. He's got the want-to of Pete Rose, and the swing when it's right is kind of Griffey-esque. But last year, he chased about 31% of the pitchers outside the strike zone. That number had been 24% the year before. That was part of the problem. And he's got to be part of the solution now, because left field, as you guys know, in Boston is a big deal. And in the decade after Manny Ramirez, there was the lavish spending on Carl Crawford, the trade for Yoenis Cespedes. They thought outside the box with Hanley Ramirez, and they let everybody down. You know, it was more success just letting utility guys get out there. Bill Hall, Brock Holt, Daniel Nava, Johnny Gomes. But then you get your first-round pick, Benintendi, and you think maybe that's the jackpot. The second number seven overall pick in a span of 3 years for the Sox. They missed pretty badly with the first one. The pitcher Trey Ball, the lefty from Indiana, Benintendi from nearby Cincinnati, proven to be a much more worthy number seven pick. And Benintendi, by the way, very nearly a Cub. And both teams wanted him in the 2015 draft. And bizarrely, it was the in-season interleague series that previous summer that determined which team could get him. The Cubs swept the Sox at Fenway in early July of 2014. Boston finished two games worse than the Cubs that year, so the Sox picked seventh and the Cubs picked ninth. If the Sox won that series, the Cubs would have picked seventh, and the Sox are convinced that they would have grabbed Benintendi instead of Ian Happ. So who knows what all that could have been. Benintendi developed very quickly in the minors. A-ball, he had the 23-game hitting streak, and at one point he went 13 days, 60 swings, without a single swing and a miss. So he was supposed to be the next big thing, and we've seen glimmers of that. Certainly provided the iconic postseason picture from the 2018 postseason, the Air Jordan pose in front of the bright white standings on the green Fenway wall, the perfect screenshot. Great young player, makes a great catch at a great ballpark right in front of where it says the home team finished 61 games ahead of the Orioles. And I remember Dan Shaughnessy wrote a great column about Benny and noting that Andrew is just so humble, he doesn't even own a copy of that picture. He's got nothing in a frame, hasn't made it a screensaver, nothing. And Shaughnessy's line, I'll always remember, he said, in a Liverpool talent outfield with John Lennon and Paul McCartney, Benny is George Harrison. He is the quiet Beatle. That's about right, if you know who the Beatles are. So, without any further ado, we go back to when I was able to talk to Andrew Benintendi a few weeks ago. And this is no baseball whatsoever. So let's start with actually the move that you're about to make. You've been a proud St. Louisan for a little while. Why Nashville?
I don't know. I mean, I bought a place there last year, and I've always loved Nashville. I mean, I haven't even really been that much, but every time I go down there, it's a great time. Big country music guy, so I got a few buddies down there, too.
So let me ask you about that, because that's what this interview is. It's no baseball. It's just people getting to know Benny a little bit better. I wouldn't have thought, growing up in Cincinnati, Ohio, that you'd be a country music guy, quite honestly. So how did that happen?
Well, I remember in third grade, I used to ride home with my aunt, Jackie. She'd drive me home from school, and there'd be country on, and I kind of picked it up from there.
So osmosis, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, it's right on the Ohio River. You know, it's close to Kentucky. It's right there.
This is true. Yeah. But you don't have. I mean, it's all stereotypes. I mean, people hear Kentucky, they're like, "Oh, hillbillies, great." Cincinnati, oh, you know, it's the Skyline Chili. Right?
Yeah.
But you've done enough traveling now to know you can't put people in silos like that, right?
Absolutely not. I mean, I know guys from California who listen to country, and that's it.
I've known hillbillies in New York. So, obviously. And this is not a hillbilly thing, but we're talking, you've got the omnipresent red, white, and blue American bandana on right now. I'm not suggesting that's hillbilly. I'm just saying that's certainly not something that I'd see walking down the streets in New York City. What was the derivation of that? Because people ask me that a lot. I'm sure they ask you, too.
I don't know. I mean, I guess just proud to be in this country. I mean, every time I'm I can, you know, support it by wearing, you know, I got some shorts too and right. my cleats.
Well, you and Mitchie both, it's funny, when you walk by a Moreland Benintendi row in the locker room, you almost want to salute.
Yeah, we like to, you know, we like to support our colors, so just some pride, I guess.
You've also got pride, I know, in your hometown. I want to ask you about Cincinnati again, if you don't mind. Your Bengals are going to be on the clock.
Yeah.
That must have been a tough year, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough to watch, but, I mean, you got the number one pick now, so we're going to see what happens.
When the Bengals and Patriots played, did you just kind of bite your lip and turn your phone off, or how did that go?
No, I mean, I turned Twitter off. No, but, no, I'll root for the Bengals. I mean, as I've gotten older, I've become more of a fan just to, you know.
Who were your guys growing up? Who were your big, were you an Ocho Cinco guy, or who did you like?
See, I'm not a big, you know, individual player guy. I mean, okay. I think, I don't know, hopefully Joe Burrow. Hopefully he'll be the next one. Yeah, so we'll see.
Get that jersey rolling. Yeah, do you have an Andy Dalton jersey?
I don't, no.
Okay.
No.
Probably these days a wise course of action. Reds growing up, I got to ask you, obviously that was a team that a couple times in your childhood got to be pretty good. So did you have specific guys that you rooted for growing up in Cincy?
Yeah, Griffey, Jay Bruce, you know, growing up there. I used to go down to the games, Brandon Phillips. You know, so it was funny, you know, in 18 playing with Brandon Phillips, and like, I used to watch this guy. It was
blow your mind a little bit?
Yeah. I was like, he's just right here, like a normal dude, right?
Was he as nice as you had hoped he would be?
Yeah, absolutely. He's awesome. You know, I've never heard a bad thing about him, so he's a good dude.
When you look back on your baseball days, do you already have, whether it's a Brandon or I'm looking around this locker room right now, are there guys you know you're going to tell your grandkid, like, I played with that guy, and it was so cool? I mean, are you already kind of making that list in your head?
I think right now there's one, and it's just David Ortiz. I think once other guys are out of the game, it's better to say something then, but right now when they're still playing, I don't know if I want to admit that.
Right, well, they might hear you anyway. Right. And this is a really weird one, almost like a philosophical one, but it seems like you, whether you do this on purpose or not, I have no idea, but you live your life, you go about your business, almost like, I have a feeling people are going to say that about you. You know, I mean, you treat people very well. So where did that come from? Is that your upbringing? Is that something that clicked with you where you saw, okay, I get it. You know, you get what you give, right? I mean, so was that always in you, or did you kind of pick that up?
No, I mean, I think that's just the way I was raised, my parents, just respecting other people. I mean, obviously there's going to be times when you're not so nice to other people and you're
in
a bad
mood.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But I try to be as nice as possible, and especially in this, you know, it's part of the job, and you have to talk to people and go out and, you know, sign autographs. So
doesn't cost anything to be nice, right?
Yeah, exactly. So when you're not dreading that, like, it's pretty enjoyable.
So last one's for you, actually, quick set of questions for you. Off-season pursuits, we've talked a little bit about following the Bengals, which I still can't believe you do.
Yeah.
But what else is occupying your day? You're a Netflix guy. What else happens when you got downtime?
Shows. I watch a lot of shows, movies, video games with some of the guys. I like to golf a lot.
Are you good?
I'm getting better.
Yeah. It takes some work.
It does. I mean, once you know, during the season, I don't play, so you go, you know, 6 months without playing, and then you got to pick it back up.
A lot of rust. Yeah,
exactly.
What are your Netflix go-tos, if you don't mind me asking?
Some of my favorite ones are Ozarks, Game of Thrones, Yellowstone. I watched that last year.
I heard Yellowstone's real good.
That's my top two.
Wow,
so,
And movies, do people go to the movies anymore, or you just kind of wait and stream them, or what do you do?
Yeah, I usually wait and catch them online, but I went to a few this offseason.
Do you have, over the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, are there movies that you're still thinking, like, man, that was good, I like that?
I mean, I always go back to my favorite movie being Wedding Crashers.
Bonding. This is very, all right.
I mean, I can watch that 100 times in a row, and I'm going to laugh every single time.
And so I got to ask you this, because I'm kind of a connoisseur of Will Ferrell movies myself. Yeah. The last 20, 30 minutes didn't undo for you? Because this is just personal, but I'm like, guys, end the movie. That you've done it. That's enough.
Right. No, I can see that. But I don't know. I just love it so much.
We wouldn't have gotten to Chaz if we didn't have those last 20 or 30. Do you recommend, is there like an age cutoff that you know that you would...
For that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, everybody, I guess, learns at different speeds and stuff like that, but probably a little older. Yeah, definitely not when you're, you know, 10 or lower.
Favorite scene? Do you have one particular? For me, it's always the quail hunt.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I will take this down the road right now. Get out of your way. Thank you, Bob.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. That's it. That's Andrew Benintendi in Happier Times. We thank you for tuning in to Red Sox Beat, and we'll continue every week to give you some content. We'll talk to writers to get you up to speed on what's what. I'll have a interview for you, even if it is a little tone deaf in these crazy times. Maybe it is just the right thing to do to give you a little slice of when everything was normal, even just a few weeks ago. So that's the plan anyway. This is Josh Lewin. Appreciate you very much. It's called Red Sox Beat. Bye-bye.